From APM, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. By now, you've likely seen or heard about the video of President Donald Trump beating up a man with the CNN logo superimposed over his face. It was created from footage of a World Wrestling Entertainment event. The video was a meme, a piece of media or culture reimagined or repackaged for internet consumption. And after President Trump's Twitter account tweeted the video with additional audio, it was met with, shall we say, a pretty negative reaction, and not just among the press. The person who created the meme, a user of the site Reddit, has since apologized. The whole thing got us wondering about the meme economy and ownership. Like, who owns a meme? Corinne McSherry is a legal director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Corinne, thanks for chatting.
It's my pleasure.
Corinne, can one copyright a meme?
Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to give you a very lawyerly answer.
Please.
It depends. I mean, you can copyright a video, you can copyright a photograph, right? You can copyright lots of kinds of creative expression. So you can't exactly copyright a meme as a meme, but if it involves creative expression, there might be someone who has rights in it. I think the more interesting question is actually, can you control a meme?
Right. And by nature of what memes are themselves, you kind of don't have control over them, right?
That's exactly right. And in fact, the reality is people are often free, particularly in the United States, to use copyrighted material in all kinds of ways, because we have something called the Fair Use Doctrine that protects your ability to take existing material and reuse it, repurpose it, comment on it.
So let's talk about this particular meme. Who owns this meme? Is it the WWF? Is it the Reddit guy who slapped a CNN logo on it? Is it the president? Who owns it?
I actually think none of the above. I think that there may be that there's an original video that there's some rights in, and then there is some secondary expression and somebody might have some rights in that. But again, you only have rights in what you have rights in. So again, the wrestling folks might have some rights in the original video, but that doesn't mean they get to control how it gets reused.
Right.
And then the secondary user might have some rights in what he created, or she, I guess we don't know for sure. But that's all they own, right? That's the extent of it.
So, Corinne, you're the legal director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. As we are talking, there's a lot of discussion online about this story. There's suggestion that CNN blackmailed this user. CNN is saying, no, it didn't blackmail this user. There are death threats flying around. What do you think about all of this?
Well, there's a couple things that I think are important here. One is that we actually believe it's very important to uphold our strong protections that we have in the United States for anonymous speech. It kind of goes back to the founders. The Federalist Papers were published anonymously. And we think the right to sort of express yourself anonymously is a very, very important right, because if people are afraid of retaliation, they may be afraid to say things that actually should be said.
Corinne McSherry, she is legal director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Corinne, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Take care.
By the way, yes, I called it the WWF. That is because most of my pro wrestling viewing happened back in the 1990s, before the WWF became the WWE. They don't call me Ben the Hitman Hart for nothing. Just kidding. Nobody calls me that. It is fair to say that there is a direct correlation between your level of belief in the power of big data with what you do for a living. If you need to follow large-scale changes for sociology work or climate science, you understand that the computational power that allows us to sift through huge data sets can help us understand the world. If you're a dork who talks on the radio, your understanding is basic at best, but the company Enigma promises to be a powerful tool for anyone accessing and understanding publicly available data sets. Isham Udgiri is the company's founder and CEO. Isham, thanks for talking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So when the company launched in 2013, you called yourselves a Google for public data. What kind of data can people find on Enigma that they can't find on Google?
On Google, you're looking for web pages.
Mm-hmm.
On Enigma, when you look for things, you look for highly structured data sets, things like, you know, every artwork in MoMA.
Why do you think that this kind of data is so important to be presented and accessible to the public?
you know, the government has good use for most of this data. The public kind of funds this, and for a variety of purposes, this data can be wildly useful to discovering things. I mean, we worked, for instance, with the city of New Orleans, who used kind of advanced analytics around demographics data to repurpose a smoke detector delivery program.
Uh-huh.
And we used mostly public data, data that the government had already produced, to vastly improve targeting algorithms so that firemen, you know, wouldn't have to knock on 16 doors before finding one person who needed a smoke detector.
At the beginning of the current administration, we saw a lot of coders scrambling to scrape a lot of data from government and government-affiliated websites. How has your business changed in the presidency of Donald Trump?
I won't lie and say that we haven't been, you know, very nervous with the current administration's just view on transparency in general, right? We've noticed many data sets go offline, like the White House visitor logs, and we're not going to comment or be political because our work is so entrenched in these very infrastructural problems, but we can't just have this go unnoticed.
Isham Udgiri, he is co-founder and CEO of the company Enigma. Isham, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.